Diversity Music Group. Alex H. The Bomb Factory. Success.
Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to properly introduce the most incredible beast from the east, live and live in color, NJ fitted to leather and soft butter. Color up, my dollars up, I'm winning exotic cars to women, women and more women. More sinning, I'm addicted to success. Blessed, young and gifted, the bar's been lifted. Started from the bottom, I'm now on top of the world. Look, my, I made it, the new most hated. Underestimated since I haven't been painting. Our stories aren't related, so they don't believe. But who cares, I'ma run a few years before I fade to black. My impact shift back to order to lyrical manslaughter in the first degree. I am here. Express, young, young, fresh, fresh. Don't say that y'all ready, y'all fresh. Popping bottles, blowing clouds of blue. Dream chasing all my life to you. Success, success, young, young, fresh, fresh. Don't say that y'all ready, y'all fresh. Popping bottles, blowing clouds of blue. Dream chasing all my life to you.
And we welcome you to the latest edition of the Green and White Show here on this Sunday, December 20th, 2015. Of course, your boys Joseph Haas and Amiri Tella here with you. Haas, my man, how are you this morning?
Hey, I'm doing great, my man. Hey, Amiri, you know what I consider December 20th? December 20th to me has always been the pregame to December 21st, which is game day, i.e. my birthday. So what can I say? Early birthday wishes for myself. Hey, lots of birthday wishes out there. This is the time for gift giving. We want to throw a big birthday shout out there to our good man, Reverend Ralph Mancini, who probably won't be joining us today if he was out celebrating his birthday last night like I know he was. Hey, a lot of others as well. Shout out to Naomi Kyrie. There's so many birthdays around this time of the year. You always wonder. I mean, this is the season for gift giving. You know what we're going to do? We're going to give everyone the gift of the Green and White Show the next 90 minutes, Miri. I'm telling you, man, exciting game last night. We're going to talk about the Jets. How many games can they win in a row? You know, they got to win last night. We'll talk about the rest of the NFL slate for today as well. Lots of gift giving. Someone gave somebody a left hook last night. We'll talk about that in MMA. A lot more NCAA football. The bowl season is upon us. I'm going to give you guys the gift of me not talking, at least for the next couple of minutes. So, Miri, are you ready to talk some Jets football or what?
Yes, sir, Haas. The New York Jets obviously got a chance to play last night against the Dallas Cowboys. And you know, Haas, before we kind of dive into the game, I guess, you know, the conversation entering this one was what the Jets would be moving forward. Obviously, they've won this win against the Cowboys. It was a 1916 final. This win against the Cowboys really put the Jets in a position of strength right now. They've won four straight. They have looked for the most part crisp and efficient at times in at least once during this four game stretch, and they've been able to get a victory. They've been able to win when they have to win, and that was kind of the case last night. New York Jets and Todd Bowles mentioned this in the locker room, you know, conversation with his players. Just didn't really play that well, right? They were behind the eight ball for the most of this game. They were kind of at a disadvantage for the most of the game because the Dallas Cowboys, through the second, and they had taken lead of this game, but the New York Jets were able to bounce back in that fourth quarter. They put 10 points on the board, and I think more than anything, despite the result, what Todd Bowles mentioned is 100% accurate. A win is a win, Haas, and at a time like this when the New York Jets are just trying to make the postseason, you can't really look at it from a style point perspective. You can't really analyze it from a quality perspective. You kind of have to just look at it quantity over quality at this point in time with the New York Jets, Haas.
Hey, you take a win, just like you said. It is the NFL. It's hard. It's hard to get any one of those wins. So, able to scratch and claw. Very, very, very true comment by Coach Todd Bowles, and definitely affirming it by yourself, my man. You got to take them. You realize now that even if the New York Jets were to kind of sweep the slate, we'll talk about their playoff chances as well. You wonder if they can even make it in. Can you imagine 11-5? Only happened a couple other times in NFL history. Remember the Patriots doing it not so long ago. 11-5 and not making it in. A lot of things have to happen for the Jets not to make it in. And you know what? We're going to talk about the things that could possibly happen that could let the New York Jets get into the postseason. But you know what? It is about playing your best football. We all understand what we saw on the field last night from the New York Jets. Not their best football. But just like you heard from a lot of different players at the end of the game, Amiri, a good team, a playoff team, learns and knows how to win a game when they aren't playing their best, especially against inferior competition. And going up against Matt Castle to start, then Kellen Moore coming in as well, inferior competition, and the Jets defense made the Dallas Cowboys pay with a 19-16 victory.
Yep, exactly. And the New York Jets really, were in that position in that fourth quarter, and I think rightly so. A lot of credit has been given to Ryan Fitzpatrick for, kind of engineering that Jets comeback in that fourth quarter. And for the most part, the Jets really, again, as we mentioned, they did not play that well considering the fact that they came out with a victory on top. The running game was, for the most part, non-existent. And the receiving game, for the most part, was also non-existent. So it wasn't a crisp performance offensively and defensively. The New York Jets, I thought the New York Jets defense was probably the stronger aspect of this game. They were able to force four turnovers, which is something that you don't often see the New York Jets do, four interceptions to be exact. So I thought the defense had a little bit better of a performance than the offense. But I think just in general, the fact of the matter is that the New York Jets were not playing their best football and came away with the victory. And I think that fact, that aspect, that anecdote is the one that should be taken away. The New York Jets beat the Dallas Cowboys, and they were not playing their best football. So I don't think the result, the 19-16 score, is indicative, perhaps, of the New York Jets, their performance and the quality of their performance. As I mentioned, they did not really play up to that W. But I thought at this point in time, when you have two games left in the season, 9-5 right now, you're putting yourself in a prime position to contend for that postseason AFC spot. And that wild card spot. And so right at this point in time, that Cowboys game, by the end of the season, the fact that the New York Jets were able to make that comeback in the fourth quarter, that quarter itself might be the difference between the Jets contending for the postseason and not. And so next week, the New York Jets will take on the New England Patriots, which should be one of the more pivotal matchups we've seen this season, as that could, as we've been saying about all these games, really, that could really change the Jets' postseason hopes. But at this point, we mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, Haas, every game is a must win. And so the New York Jets handled business, and they got the win against the Cowboys last night.
Hey, it seems like a what I consider Super Bowl Sunday.
Next week for the New York Jets. That's
there you go.
It's going to be exciting. It's going to be tough. It's going to be tight. It's going to be a very impactful game here. Let me...
Indeed. So, yeah, when you talk about, what the New York Jets are aiming for the remainder of this season, I think the hope probably is that the New York Jets can – not probably. The hope is definitely that the New York Jets will make that wild card spot. And just to play a little standings discussion, Haas, the New York Jets are obviously right up there with a variety of AFC teams. And at this point in time, I think the New York Jets, because of that New England Patriots win, probably have the most difficult time of trying to make it. The Steelers are in the conversation, obviously, with an 8-5 record. They play later today, I believe. I'm not sure who do they play Denver today? I think they play Denver.
Kansas City. It's the
game.
Yeah.
That's going to be crucial, obviously.
Then the other game, of course, the game being played here with Carolina Panthers and New York Giants, which will obviously.
Of course.
But yeah, totally the big game. I'm sounding a whole lot better. God, it's good to hear you sounding so good. Wow. That sounds a whole lot better. Okay, yeah, of course, like you mentioned, Pittsburgh and Denver, huge game. You've got everybody wearing green and white, putting the green and white to the side for Sunday. They're all wearing orange crush as they'll be rooting for the Broncos to go ahead and take down the Steelers. That's part of the whole, how are the New York Jets going to be able to make it into the playoffs at 11-5 and it being shaky at best. They're the fifth now, but certain teams win, certain teams lose. Or Jets, they don't control their own destiny, even if they go 11-5. Great pointing out that game, Amiri. You know what? Like I said, it's going to be Super Bowl next week. Out of all of the different times that the New York Jets wanting to go out there and get on top of the New England Patriots. I mean, this is going to be the biggest, baddest time of them all, right? I mean, this is it. All the rexisms, all the ways that they decided to make this game bigger and badder than it was, this is actually the biggest, baddest game on the block next week.
Indeed, indeed. And so when you talk about the ways that the New York Jets can, you know, possibly make it into that postseason spot, this is must win. I think the interesting thing about this Jets team and honestly, any team that's been contending for the wild card spot in the AFC, the NFC is that every single game for like the last 4 or 5 weeks has pretty much been must win. Right. So every single game for all of these teams is kind of like a win or an advanced situation, or at least a win and contend situation. A loss is not even in the picture for all of these teams, right? The Chiefs in there are in that conversation as well. And that discussion only is predicated, that wild card discussion only is predicated based on victory. Schedule-wise, I guess, I think most people would agree that the Kansas City Chiefs probably have the easiest chance of making it at this point. They play the Raiders in their last week, and then the Browns the previous, and then the Ravens today. So those are three games that are completely winnable. And the Chiefs, again, have also won their last four, I believe it is, three or four. So the Chiefs are right in that must – actually, no, let me turn that back. The Chiefs have won their last –
yeah, because they won their last seven or eight.
Yeah, okay, there you go. So the Chiefs are in that must-win mode.
They've been brushing their shoulders off going, hey, wait, must win? We've been doing this since, like, before it was even cool to must win in 2015. That's what the Chiefs have been doing. I mean, rattling off win after win, tackling opponents. You know, it's been – some people are saying, wow, can you believe how many, below 500 or at 500 teams there are in the NFL? Let's talk about that for real quickly while we're getting into it. Green and White Show, Amiri Tulloch there. Joseph Haas here. Remember, you can follow Amiri Tulloch on Twitter, at Amiri Tulloch. You can follow Joseph Haas on Twitter. That's me. Just got third person on you at Jersey Haas. Now, back to the conversation. Look, if you take a serious look at the NFL right now, isn't this exactly what they wanted? Mediocrity? Isn't what they wanted every week, every game having some meaning? To have that, I mean, even the teams that are under 500 still have something to play for in two divisions, NFC East, AFC South. These divisions are being led by teams who are a game or two under 500. We're going to be battling for their playoffs lives. The Dallas Cowboys last night finally being eliminated from the playoffs after losing how many games in a row without their starting quarterback? I mean, this is what the NFL wants. That game last night wouldn't have been as meaningful if the Dallas Cowboys were out of the playoffs by two or three games. We probably would have seen Kellen Moore to start as opposed to Metcalf, which disagree with that, Amiri. And it would have been a different flavor, standalone Saturday game out here in the holidays. So the NFL, even though all of their teams aren't quote-unquote winning, the NFL is hashtag winning.
Interesting. Yeah, the NFL is the ultimate victor from these weeks. So, yeah, I agree with you, though. There's been a whole lot of parity this year, and I think that's good because it's also been balanced by powers, right? We've seen the New England Patriots and their streak. We've seen, obviously, Carolina and their streak. You know, so we've seen 13-0 at this point right now. Let's see if they can continue that, you know, against my New York Giants. So we'll see how that plays out. But, you know, we've seen Carolina. We've seen Arizona. And so I think it's been balanced. You know, the teams, the NFC East, for example, with their parity-ridden division, and the AFC South, for example, with a 6-7 team leading their division, we've balanced that, and that we've juxtaposed that this season by the Carolina Panthers 13-0, by the, you know, the Cardinals 11-2, by the Broncos 10-3, by the Patriots 11-2, by the Bengals 10-3. So I think that parity that you mentioned, which is so crucial, I think, to maintaining healthy competition throughout a season, has also been contrasted and even, you know, kind of ridden parallel to those powers exceeding at such a high, powerful level throughout the year. No doubt about it.
Yeah, let's talk. Speaking of powerful, look, we started the show talking about how so good last night against the Cowboys, but still were able to pull out a victory in a game that they did look good in the week before against the Titans. That's what you're supposed to do. 30-8, you go out there, you beat a team you're supposed to beat. That is not what happened last night against the Cowboys. It was a little shaky to start, but I do want to close out the Titans game real quick because Fitz, good game, touchdowns thrown. Marshall and Decker, man, I mean, 13 receptions, 200 yards, and two TDs. And let's not forget Mo Wilkerson with the sack. Ivory over 100 yards. I'm going to get back to Mo. First, I want to say, you know, healthy recovery to wide receiver Devin Smith, the rookie. I mean, you really saw there was some time that you saw what they wanted to do there with that speed, but him and Fitzy really weren't connecting well. You see Tompkins in the game. He didn't get more burn. Now, because we're trying to get Devin Smith deep. He's on IR for the rest of the season. We'll see how that works out. Hope he can get back and on his feet for next season, Amiri. But I want to bring all this back into the game against the Cowboys last night where I see Mo Wilkerson go down with an injury, and it seems like every week the Jets have two or three guys off the field. You saw Decker with the knee early. Mo getting dinged up as well. I mean, these are crucial players in that New York Jets roster, Amiri. So it's great to see that both of those players were able to make it back onto the football field.
Right. And then you also look at David Harris, who was also, taken out of the game with the back. And David Harris is one of the more ferocious, determined players on this Jets team. So even if he couldn't return, that kind of shows you the seriousness of that injury. So, yeah, the New York Jets struggled. Brandon Marshall also had a little hiccup here and there throughout the game. I think the New York Jets this year, the 14-week has hit them hard, and especially these last 4, 5, 6 weeks has especially hit them hard because you have the added stress of knowing a loss could ruin the season, essentially. A loss could bring the season to a non-playoff end. So I think that adds on to the stress, that adds on to the injury toll. And you know, I don't like to play hypotheticals because nothing is guaranteed at this point. But if they were to make it, let's say, to a wild card spot and they were to sneak into the postseason this year, I would have hoped that the New York Jets would be a completely healthy team. But at that point in the season, with two games left now, not to mention, again, the added stress and fortitude needed to play against the New England Patriots next week, you wonder, will this Jets team have anything left in the tank if they make it to the postseason? And let's say they do advance a game or two. At what point does the toll of injuries start to hit up with them? So I think that injury question is one that will definitely impact this Jets team moving forward. And while if you were to make a situation like the Patriots game an adrenaline-type performance where the Jets will perform off of adrenaline and that will bolster their performance, which I think is possible, you just have to wonder about the day after, right, when the New York Jets are sitting there and struggling as to how to move forward.
Right, yeah, you wonder. You don't want to just go in. You see those teams that, you know, they ride an emotional high for a week or two, and then that lets out, and then what are they playing? You want in and have not just a sound game plan, but have the players on the roster to be able to execute that game plan. And it's hard. You see what happens when, I mean, but if you want to sit here and really talk about injury, Amiri, anything could happen at any time. You could sit there and one of the your team, like a kicker, like a punter, like a long snapper, things that you're sitting there, you always think, oh yeah, we need to back up offensive linemen and defensive linemen and make sure you have an extra, and don't forget, you know, make sure your backup quarterback is studied up. But you know, there are other parts of the game where, you know, little injury here or there can really impact a team's ability to move forward. So that's why you always hear teams and coaches go, next man on the injuries. You got to really, you know, play through it. When we see Brandon Marshall run off the field holding his arm, you wonder what the deal is, and then you find out a little bit later it was just cramps, and you know, he takes an IV. Dez Bryant actually also ended up getting an IV in that game as well, so a little cramping there in Dallas. Never cramping your style here on the Green and White Show. Amiri Tulloch there, Joseph Hosk here. A little bit more about the game last night, Amiri. I mean, Calvin Pace, he gets a big sack. You love what you see from that defense. You know, not as much from Ivory as you would like, you know, but hey, you know what? A win, like we said, is a win. Bullock with the game-winning field goal. 20 takeaways, Amiri, by the New York Jets team. As of last night, I believe that was second in the NFL. Can you believe that? This is a team – You know how many times we used to talk about this, Mary? I mean, we used to beat this subject in. Move the quarterback off the spot. Yeah, you're a ferocious defense, but you've got to take the ball away. Well, you know what? It's great to see that the New York Jets are actually doing that. And look at this. That's what turns a 4-and-whatever team into a 9-and-whatever team, Amiri. It's taking the football away.
Right, right. And that was a huge, huge, obviously a huge aspect of the game against the Dallas Cowboys last week. And as far as looking forward to the Patriots, I think that is obviously going to be a crucial aspect to that game as well. I mean, you know, and I think the interesting thing about that Patriots matchup is that, you know, you're playing a team that also would love more than to not see you in the postseason. So that adds that extra fuel. But I would say this, though, if there's ever an advantage to twist on that Patriots game, I think it's the fact that the New York Jets have over a week to prepare, right? Like, the New York Jets will enter that game. We just talked about injuries. New York Jets will enter that game, I assume, well-rested and given an opportunity to kind of take a step back because of that Saturday night performance they had. So if anything, the New York Jets are entering this Patriots game with a tiny bit of an advantage, as they have that week and a day, that extra day, I guess, of leeway to prepare for that matchup. And I'm sure Todd Bowles is going to try and maximize every possible day that they have with the team this upcoming week, because when you talk about playing a team like the New York Patriots, a lot of it is solely predicated, and a lot of your success is solely predicated on how you prepare. I mean, we've seen it with my Giants team beating them twice in the Super Bowl, but we've seen them, the New England Patriots have struggled so much when it comes to teams that enter with a game plan in mind, a fixated game plan, and have an opportunity to kind of stifle what they do well, their machine-like tendencies offensively and defensively. And so I think that preparation aspect is going to play a huge role into this game. And as you mentioned, being able to shut down New England's passing threat, which for the most part has been a potent aspect of their team, being able to obviously shut down LeGarrette Blount, who has also had a nice year this season. So, I mean, this is a multifaceted Patriots team. So they will need the New York Jets, will need to enter this game with a well-grounded game plan, no doubt about it.
Token mention of New York Giants victory.
Of course.
Patriots. Where am I on my show? Check. Okay. I got that on my show rundown here. I just wanted to make sure I checked that. Check that off there.
Always getting in.
That fact. Well, Giants, a little bit of love on the show, a local going in, and they're going to have to take on the undefeated Carolina Panthers. And we all know the history of the New York Giants facing off against these undefeated teams and how they've been able to kind of score some streaks. The Broncos can, you know, scratch the back of their heads and recollect. The New England Patriots don't have to look as far back as the Broncos do to recollect such a tragic event against the Giants. So everybody seems to has what it takes to go out there and really stifle a Carolina Panthers team that looks like they've got it working on all. I mean, that team looks so fun. They don't wow you with the passing game. Okay, they've got some deep strikes, but it's not like a Broncos with Peyton Manning type, you know, passing game. You know, they thump you over the head with the run. They're going to be short their star running back this week, but it's the matchup. It's the matchups that we love, Amiri. Odell Beckham Jr. You think he's found his match on the other sideline against the Carolina Panthers? I don't know. I wonder if there's room for an island at MetLife.
Yeah, Odell Beckham. Interesting, the conversation these past few weeks have been kind of centered around the best quarterback in the NFL. As the Giants' postseason chance kind of slip, the conversation has certainly changed. And when you talk about Odell Beckham and his performances this year, I think he definitely enters that conversation of the best in the league, when you, especially when you mention, you know, the fact that he hasn't really entered this year with any sort of he ended last year, I guess, with high expectations, and that those high expectations, as we've seen in the past, often can breed, you know, a struggling performance, right? It often can breed, I don't want to say ineptitude, but it can also often breed complacency. And it does not look like that has been the case for Odell Beckham this year. He has always been one of those players, I think, where the game just comes a little easier to him, where he's able to kind of just make it look so simple in what all in all actuality might be an extremely difficult play. Like the way that he'll break loose and the way that he'll gain leverage from him and a defensive backs is it seems so easy from what we see as observers, but I am sure in the moment would take only a talented receiver to do. So I think what he does so well is he's able to take the difficult aspects of the game and kind of make it his own, tailor it to his own strengths and weaknesses, and as a result make whatever he does look so simple, and the catches he ridiculously makes look so simple. And so I would totally agree that Odell Beckham is right up there in that conversation with one of the better receivers in the National Football League. And of course, there's a couple other names that you need to throw out into that conversation. A lot of people have been mentioning Antonio Brown, which I completely understand. I honestly agree with. But yeah, no doubt about it. Odell Beckham has really been one of the strongest, most consistent Giants receivers that they've had as of the last few years. And as a Giants fan, we have definitely gone through our fair share of consistent, decent receivers over the past few seasons.
Okay, that's enough big blue talk. No, I'm just kidding. We'll be getting to that game a lot more as the show continues. I wanted to bring it back to the New York Jets and their strong stable of wide receivers. I wanted to bring it back to Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker, Mary, because to see a tandem go and really lift a team, isn't it? I mean, you've had the pleasure of seeing what a true number one wide receiver, and Braylon Edwards was good at his time for a little bit, and yes, Antonio Holmes was a bit closer to a number one wide receiver as the Jets had in a long time, but this is the difference between someone trying to be a number one wide receiver and someone who is a number one wide receiver. There's just a difference when you throw the ball to Brandon Marshall. I mean, you get the same impact on the field when the Jets throw to Brandon Marshall as you see when the Steelers throw to a Brown, when the Bengals throw to Green, when the Falcons throw to a Jones. You know, you see that. You can almost hear the crowd. The minute they catch the ball, everybody inhales and waits to see what that player is going to do next. And whenever I see Brandon Marshall going across the middle, whenever I see Brandon Marshall streaking on the field, whenever I see Brandon Marshall going to, actually, basically, whenever I see Brandon Marshall line up. Basically, I'm looking forward to a big play to the Jets offense. As someone who's completely taken advantage of that is Eric Decker. All right, and he's so subtle. So I really, I had to gasp when I saw him on perf, with the knee, and it was great to see him get back up and get back in the game. But Eric Decker really has taken this complimentary role. And a lot of players who come over to a team and who was initially slated as, wait, hey, look, he's other team number two, but he could be our number one. And then they go out and get a number one, and he has to step to the side and go to number two. But it could have been a whole lot different, Amiri. There could have been attitude. There could have been, throwing up the hands. There could have been, I'm out of here kind of thing. But he embraced his role. And because of that, these two, gigantic, great wide receivers have combined for 20 touchdowns and are about to shatter the New York Jets' offensive record books as far as wide receivers are concerned. Always look to shatter the records, especially broadcast records. Your man Amiri Tillich over there, the prodigy. Your man Joseph Haas over here, the philosopher. Yeah, I can't say prodigy, right? I gotta go the philosopher. Hey, do I have the long beard? Not exactly Socrates here, but joining you here on the Green and White Show, hope everybody's having a great time. We're going to give you a because since we haven't given this segment, the Rangers have been on some kind of losing streak. So let's go ahead and get ice time with Amiri, and let's see if we can get the Rangers back to a winning track. Amiri, go.
Yes, the New York Rangers, one of the more interesting, I don't know how to say this, one of the more interesting stretches of a season, I guess. The Rangers have struggled as of late. They're 3-5-2 in their last 10. They've dropped from the first spot in the Eastern Conference, and Washington, who's on a tear at this point, have usurped them. They're 6 points ahead of the New York Rangers. And what's interesting about the Rangers spot right now is, earlier in the season, they had such a stranglehold on that division, that Metropolitan Division there. But now they're right on the same boat as teams like the Islanders, teams like the Devils, teams like the Flyers, and teams like the Penguins. All teams who, when you talk about the comparison in talent don't seem to be anywhere near the New York Rangers talent-wise. So if you're a Rangers fan right now, I think the hope is that your team turns it around and is able to get back on top. But, yeah, this stretch has been a struggle for New York. This stretch has been, I think, part of the reason why they've not been able to exceed that they haven't been scoring goals. They haven't been putting points on the board. They've scored 2 goals in their last 3 games, and prior to that, they scored a goal. They lost in a shootout by 1 against the Islanders earlier. They've been shut out a couple times as of late. So when you're not able to score in the NHL, it's essentially a death sentence, because if you cannot score, obviously, then your offense is for the most part ineffective. And that kind of trickles down to the entire remainder of the team. So we'll see if the Rangers can correct that. Henrik Lundqvist also, and the Rangers defense in general, just has not been at their A game as of late. But moving forward, I think it's interesting to note a team like Washington, who has meanwhile kind of taken over as what the New York Rangers used to be. Washington leading the league, in goals against. They're leading the league in goals per game with a solid 3.0. And led by Alexander Ovechkin, who's had a nice resurgence kind of year. This team has certainly made its claim as being one of the better teams in the Eastern Conference, if not the best in the Eastern Conference right now. So certainly they are a team to keep an eye out on as the Rangers kind of try to refine themselves, if that's a phrase there. So let's see how the Rangers play out over the second hemisphere of this season. And as far as the Western Conference is concerned, Dallas leads in the Central Division. They got 50 points right now. Dallas has been one of the better teams consistently this season, which has been evidenced again by their lead in the Central Division. But interestingly enough, on the Pacific Division, that's the trouble conference, because they still have not been able to generate anything this year. They've been, for the most part, a subpar to average division all the way through. Los Angeles with 42 points right now. San Jose is the next closest team, Haas, with 33. So that division certainly can use some work. Think about this, and I'll end on this. San Jose is the second team in that division points-wise. They have 33 points. The last team in the division, the least point getter right now, 29 points with Anaheim. So there's a very small discrepancy between second and last in that Pacific division at this point.
Yes, my Sharks to take a bite at the division. Great, with another great shift as usual. And yes, buddy, I checked for you. You're good. Refined is a word. I love how you threw that. He's like, yeah, I got that. I knew that. You're confident. I love the confidence. Let's get into a Ryan Fitzpatrick timeout real quickly. Turn it around. Get into some more great conversation. My man, Amiri, go.
Indeed. The listeners out there can go check me out throughout the week at JG Sports Talk on Twitter, at Amiri Tulla as well. That is AmiriTulloch. And you can find me as well at JGSportsTalk.com.
Yes, make sure you go ahead and check out the Prodigy as well. He's doing big things online. Doing big things online as well, Hostile Interpretations. Make sure you go ahead and check that out. I'll spell it for you. It's HAASSTYLE interpretations.com. Don't forget, my inbox is your inbox, so hit me up 24/7. JosephHahn@gmail.com. 24/7 when you need me, you know where to find me online. Always giving opinions on games, in game, especially on fight nights too, like last night. So you had the football, you had the MMA. Always follow there at Jersey Haas. Now back to the Green and White Show. But first, I wanted to drop this in there. You know, you hear our success song in the beginning of the show. Special shout out to our buddy Alex Hurst, who has gotten that album dropped. Finally able to talk about it. I've been like holding back and couldn't wait, and finally it has dropped on Amazon. Better late than never. No, that's not me talking. That's actually the title of the album. Better late than never. Go ahead, search Alex H on Amazon. Go out there, support the man. Great song, great album. It's the gift giving season. Now, we're going to give you the gift of some more Green and White Show. Amiri Tulloch there, Joseph Haas here. Hey, look, this is where we get into the AFC East. This is where we would normally do the rest report with Ralph Mancini, but he's taking a birthday break, so I'll blow out a candle for my man there. We're going to holler at him again next week. Let's get into a little bit of the AFC East, because we know the two teams that we're going to concern ourselves with in the AFC East are the York Jets and the New England Patriots, they'll collide next Sunday. Like I mentioned at the beginning of the show, little Super Bowl here for the guys in green and white. The Patriots know they're going to the postseason. I mean, it's going to take an epic collapse for them not to make it and for the Jets to overtake them in the AFC East. But there are other teams. Amiri, the Jets could win out and not make the postseason, but there are other teams. People have been focusing on the Steelers and the Chiefs and where they could end up and how that could impact the Jets. But let's look a little bit further. Now, as I was listening to the postgame, the great Don LaGreca, you can follow him on Twitter at Don LaGreca. You can listen to him during the week as well. 3-7 drive time here in NYC on ESPN Radio. Always does a great job. What he was mentioning last night, which was great, was guess what? There are two other teams that could falter, that could actually help the New York Jets get into the postseason, Amiri. Those Cincinnati Bengals, who I've basically had zero love for, and you know, I feel bad that Andy Dalton went down. I really want to see what they would do with their starting quarterback. So A.J. McCarron starting there. That's one team that could falter. Let's not forget the Denver Broncos, who are also, you know, right now starting Brock Osweiler, not their starting quarterback, Peyton Manning. These are two teams with the postseason in front of them who could falter. Who says they could win out? They could falter. And if they falter, guess what? Hello, New York Jets, if they continue to win out. So there's a lot of scenarios. Amiri, what do you think about that scenario? Could my 49ers, my lowly 49ers, make an impact on the NFL season by taking down the Cincinnati Bengals this week?
The impact that the reverberations that could have, that could be a positive. And I think for the most part, a lot of those teams that are struggling at this point, they really have nothing to lose. The least that they can do is kind of knock out a season, right? So I think when you talk about your 49ers specifically, they're one of the platitude of teams, or plethora of teams rather, that I think have that opportunity really to kind of ruin team season. In the last few weeks, as far as San Francisco is concerned, Haas, I think, you know, that's a role that they would have to play at this point. They unfortunately don't have much to play for remaining this season. They are in a position right now where they really are kind of looking to the future, I guess. And this year is kind of been put behind them. So at the very least, you can go out and kind of go out on a bang. I think the Dallas Cowboys were trying to do that last night as well. They had an opportunity to kind of do that with the New York Jets. Specifically talking about last night's game. And now that they're 4-10, they're moving forward. I'm sure they're in the same boat as your 49ers. So, yeah, when you talk about parity, I think that's one of the things – that's one of the results. You have those tiers, I guess. You have the powers like the Patriots and like the 49 – like the Panthers. You have the teams that are kind of right down in the middle of the road, like your Jets, you know, like your Chiefs, like your Vikings, you know, like your Seahawks. And then you have the kind of the tier that's just there, the tier that's just existing, that's not making too much noise, is not too bad, but it's just there. And I think the 49ers fall into that category. I think Dallas falls into that category. I think New Orleans falls into that category. I certainly think Jacksonville falls into that category. So I think there's a very wide variety of the type and quality of teams this NFL season. Talked about earlier with parity, that certainly plays into that fact. No doubt about it.
Well, you make a great point there about you know, just about the parity.
Hello? Oh, okay, good. Just
there you go.
Sure on that. Okay, perfect. Now you make a great point there. We're going to talk about a lot of these different teams that have a shot. Carolina Panthers. Hey, how about, you know, I made that token mention of the AFC South before, but you know Houston and Indiana have a big game today. I mean, there are another couple of teams that are playing, not with the lineups that you thought they would play with. Who would have thought now that we wouldn't see more Andrew Luck, seeing those Andrew Luck, you know, token of luck beard commercials early. They they look real funny now as he's not even on the football field, Amiri. In terms of what the Jets need to do in order, okay, to really stamp themselves, and not look, are they striking fear into opponents? They should be, okay. But last night, that was a little bit of a that was a test for me. You saw a team that was supposed to be one of the most prolific teams in the red zone. Okay, they had to settle for field goals as opposed to getting the touchdowns they needed. They were stopped on a few short occasions. I thought, and I, this isn't revisionist history, from watching it last night, I thought going for that fourth and one that early, I can understand how you want to put a stranglehold on a team that you think is not as good as you are, but I thought that was just a little too early on the road. Maybe at home you go for that. I thought on the road, and I thought it at the time, I thought on the road they should have gone for the field goal there, almost came back and did them as they almost didn't have enough points to cover that. But with 2 minutes left in the game, the New York Jets able to drive down the field and score a victory.
Interesting. Yeah, the New England Patriots next week I think will also test the New York Jets in a variety of ways. It will test the Jets, you know, just transition into that game moving forward. I think it'll definitely test the Jets and their ability to kind of, like, as we mentioned, stop the run. And that's, for the most part, been one of the Jets' fortes this season, I guess. That's a fair statement to make. The Jets have taken advantage of the fact that they have such a formidable defensive line. And this is a Patriots team that has been able to, on some nights, generate a lot of rushing opportunities, and on other nights have been kind of quiet. So that'll certainly be an aspect that we're looking forward to. But obviously the big conversation will be with how the New York Jets, and the big test, I guess, will be how the New York Jets stop the passing game of the New England Patriots. Best in the NFL, about 300 yards plus per game. That's a ridiculous number when you think about it. And you know, you're looking up and down that receiving receiving game for New England, and you're seeing the names. And I think a lot of trust has been installed in this Jets secondary throughout this season. But I don't think you've ever had to face a test quite as diverse, quite as I mentioned earlier, quite as varied as Rob Gronkowski, Julian Edelman, Danny Amendola, who can all three come out of the come out of different positions and prove to be such a vital incontainable threat, really. So that will be one of the more interesting tests, no doubt about it, on for this upcoming week for the New York Jets moving forward. And speaking of tests, let's obviously see what they can do to clamp down on the head of the snake, Tom Brady.
Yeah, definitely. Because there's a guy who's on his way, just looking at another MVP season. How about this? A little quick side chat. I heard a lot of the conversation this week. Cam Newton or Tom Brady right now, MVP? I mean, I'm leaning towards what Cam and the Panthers are doing, because I've been riding the Cam train for a few years now and really liking what they're seeing. But you can't overlook what Tom Brady's been doing with, he's had all three of those great receivers, his great pass catchers, have all gone down during the season. Okay, he's been able to play with next man up, as Tom Brady seems to, he's always been able to do. But let's not forget, this Panthers team was supposed to look a lot different in the preseason when Benjamin goes down, tears up his ACL, and that's him for the end of the season. For the season,
right.
People said, who's Cam Newton going to throw this ball to? And he's been able to go ahead and make Ted Ginn Jr. And a resurgence in his career as well, made him into a deep threat and a weapon. So you see Olsen as a tight end as their major pass receiver. You see D'Angelo Williams. He ends up going to Pittsburgh, and you wonder what's Carolina going to do. So it's not like Cam Newton hasn't been out there, mixing it up and playing with who he's got around him and doing a good job. Again, I just can't. It's been a good NFL season, bordering on great NFL season with the parity, and then you're going to see, another group of great matchups here. You've got the New York Giants against the Carolina Panthers, and that's one, I'm salivating for that. I can't believe we're going to get that early. That's just going to be a great game. And for all the Jets fans, so they do know, next week's game has not been flexed, and according to the NFL, it doesn't look like it will be flexed. So next week's game will remain a 1 p.m. start. So don't forget, 11 o'clock pregame and 1 p.m. start for the Jets and the Patriots. That's going to be a dandy, Amiri.
Indeed it will. I want to go back to your question, though, about Cam and the Brady conversation. I would definitely agree with that. I think right now I would say Cam Newton. But as you mentioned, I think you can't really have that conversation without acknowledging what Tom Brady has been doing. Let's think about it. At this point in the season, he has thrown 1,000 more yards than Cam Newton has. That's a ridiculous amount.
But I guarantee you that Cam Newton's probably run for about 700 more yards than Tom Brady has.
True, He Cam Newton, and I think that's one of the things that bolster Cam Newton's argument, right? He's been able to do it on a much different level than we've seen in the past.
Yeah, there's a way to – I mean, there's always a way to play with numbers. I mean, that right there, you would have been like, wow, really? Yeah, he's thrown for 1,000 more yards than Cam Newton. That's right, but Cam Newton's run for about 700 more yards than Tom Brady. Okay, that right. offense runs differently. He impacts the game differently just by – just his threat of being able to run the ball changes the entire dynamic of how a defense goes up against Cam Newton versus how a defense will go up against a Tom Brady. So I mean, each different strokes for different folks. Each one has their own weapon, how their coaching staffs are able to utilize them. You know, head coach Ron Rivera, the Riverboat Gambler, doing an outstanding job just keeping that team's head together. Now, I'm wondering how he's going to – and now we can transition a little bit into, you know, we're getting closer to almost 16-0. So, it's you know, you can actually talk about it a little bit, the knockdown, halves, one or two losses. And it's time to talk, you know, 16-0. And what do you do if you get that close? Now, let's not forget Ron Rivera used to be a player. He used to be a player on that Chicago Bears team. Okay, that 85 Bears team that had a shot to go perfect. And he remembers Ditka's, you know, Ditka's not emphasizing the fact that they could do it and not going for history there, them losing a game. So what do you think that Ron Rivera should go for it like I do? I say 16-0, that's a once, twice. You know, you don't see that. You don't see that often. You've only seen it once. You know, so let's see if we can see it again with the Patriots. Do you think they should go for it, as I do?
Could you repeat the question? Sorry, it kind of got a little breaked up at the end.
Oh, no problem. It sounds like the Democratic debate right here. Okay. Can you repeat the question? Yes. What I want to know is, should the Carolina Panthers go for it? 16-0, should they go for it?
I think they have a chance, which is interesting. I don't know. I don't know if they, as you just asked, I don't know if they want that kind of target throughout the postseason. But when you talk about the teams that they have to play in the Buccaneers, the Falcons, the Giants, I'm wondering if even if they did bench some of their starters the last 2 weeks, let's say.
Oh, I see. You didn't say 3 weeks there. You said 2 weeks.
Of course. My Giants will be playing against the number ones, I hope. But let's say they do kind of give some days off for the Falcon game and the Buccaneers game. I don't know if I'd be surprised if the Carolina Panthers pull it out. Even without those number ones.
Yeah, I could see them definitely. I don't know how much, I don't know against the Buccaneers or against the, let's get there. NFL teams are all going to have something to play for. So, I mean, you go out there and you send out your, you know, your second string QB, you start sending out second string. We'll see what ends up happening there. I think they go for it. I think they should push hard. Another reason why is because I just don't – I don't want to see a team that seems to have it together lose their rhythm in the last month. And that could tend to happen. You know, you can lose your rhythm because you know you're getting a week off. You've got to buy. You know you're getting a week off already. Okay, so you know right then, you know, team's going to be a little bit rusty, you know, coming in off the bye. You want to just try to keep that momentum up. You want to keep that mental edge up as well. You know, how can you not want to be, you know, at your mental peak going into the postseason? But, you know, taking a week off, you might be a little complacent. You get a chance to read your own headlines, you know, around family, everybody bumping you up. You want to keep that hunger. You want to keep that drive. So I would say go ahead,
right.
Play it like a regular game because, I mean, on any given player could get injured. And you don't play the game not to get hurt. I mean, you don't play the game thinking about injury because if you do, that's when you do get injured.
I would totally agree with all that you said because I think the most important factor in this conversation is sharpness. Right now the Panthers are sharp. Right now the Panthers, as you mentioned earlier, firing on all cylinders. Would not having Cam Newton start the last two games make that efficiency dwindle? I don't know. I don't think anybody can say that for certain, but that's a tangible, legitimate reality, tangible, legitimate concern. So I would say that when you talk about what you want to have entering the postseason, you want to have momentum because you can be the most talented teams. We've seen this countless years. You can be the most talented team, if you don't have momentum entering the postseason, especially in the one-and-done postseason like the NFL, you could lose. And that's a real concern for any NFL team that enters that gridiron, that tournament at the end of the season, right? You could lose regardless of your talent level, right? When as we mentioned, when my Giants in 42, Super Bowl 42, they could have easily entered that game into the postseason that year in general with having some complacency, but having to enter that Super Bowl through the wild card, through Tampa Bay, right, through Dallas, through those arduous teams, and that momentum kind of built. I think that's what made them even more confident to topple New England in the Super Bowl. And we saw that year with New England, they were forced to stay on edge as well through the last weeks of the season, right? So I think that in and of itself, although they didn't win the Super Bowl, I think that helped them in the long run as well. They were forced to keep on their edge and keep on their toes by those Giants teams, by that Giants team rather, that beat them or almost came close to beating them that last week of the season in that 07 season. So I think that fight till the end is only beneficial to your end overall goal. They're already in the season, obviously. So at this point, all you're trying to do, if you're the Panthers, is keep the momentum, keep the flow, and keep that good feeling, that good energy around the facility going. You take a week off, for example, and you lose. I'm sure you lose a little bit of that intangible, unstated confidence that you had, or at least assuredness that you have that you're unable to be beaten.
So true there. I want to take this and bring this a little bit to basketball. As we saw the Warriors go on that tremendous streak, then finally get taken down by the Milwaukee Bucks. And what I loved about the Warriors was the fact that they weren't like, oh, yeah, one game at a time. They were like, yes, it's an awesome streak. We want to keep it going. And I loved that about the Warriors. They were young. They were exciting. And they wanted to win every game. They wanted to see how far they could take the streak. And when they finally lost, they felt bad about it. They didn't want to lose. They were mad about it. And you know what? You end up getting the revenge game a couple of nights ago. And that was an awesome game. And then seeing the Milwaukee Bucks, who, come on, they're way below 500 as a team. The Warriors fans, actually, because of the T-shirts in Milwaukee that I talked about last week, end up going and the Warriors end up with a 10-8 T-shirt. Which I thought were great. Well, I thought that was just great to be able to say, hey, look, the Warriors could have went in there and said, this is just a regular season game, okay? We've already lost the streak, okay? They're pushing us through the fourth quarter with a 8-10 point lead where the Bucks in Golden State. It looked like both teams went out there to play with a little bit of something extra. Warriors showing a little bit of championship resolve there, go out in the final couple of minutes of the game, decide to take the game over, then end up winning by over 10 points, which was great there for Warriors fans, brushing my shoulders off. Great for Warriors fans. But it goes to show that there is that intensity. The players want it. And who's going to – are the Carolina Panthers players, are they going to galvanize? Are they going to want it? Are they going to embrace this journey towards 6-0? And the first step, it takes place, Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern time, right here at MetLife. So a little history in our own backyard. That's going to be an outstanding game. I can't wait for that one. We gotten ourselves a whole lot of NFL talk in. Hey, let's squeeze in just a little bit more NBA, Amir, if we could, because I don't know about you, but I never thought just one little EBO dunk by Kobe Bryant would blow up the internet. But apparently Kobe Bryant can still jump. I forgot about this.
Yeah, that was a little unexpected at the end of the year. The Kobe Bryant conference. I don't know if we ever got a chance to really talk about Kobe's retirement on the show, right? What were your thoughts when
really.
You heard that announcement?
Yeah, I'm not the biggest Kobe fan, so yeah, it was. unless you bring Kobe up, I'm pretty much like, I only brought him up because he had a little bunnies there. You blow up the internet when you get that many hits, you get a little love on the green and white show. I'm here to look there, Joseph Foss here. Kobe Bryant, the topic of conversation. Few and far between this year, I guarantee you that. But Kobe Bryant, hey, look, I'm not saying that. It's only because I'm biggest Michael Jordan fan ever, so I don't really, Kobe's, Jordan light, just. just never was my cup of tea. I always thought Shaq was the man on those teams. Kobe's a good player, yes. He's an outstanding player, yes. You know, a Hall of Fame player, yes. Michael Jordan, no.
I think he is really a carbon copy of Michael Jordan, obviously, and I think he took the good from Michael Jordan, and also I think some of the negative traits Jordan had over his career. I think Kobe Bryant's an interesting, complicated player, but when you talk about his success on the court, I don't think there's any parallel really in this recent generation of somebody who's mixed that flash and that talent, that raw talent offensively and even defensively, and been able to mix it and stay atop the game for years. So when you talk about him, when you talk about guys like Tim Duncan, who's also been in the game since Kobe Bryant, he came in the game before Kobe Bryant, I believe, as well, right? So when you talk about somebody like Tim Duncan, who won't receive as much discussion this year, but certainly is on his final years, I guess.
This
also
the end
in that
is...
conversation.
Yes, the end is near for Tim Duncan, but we just don't know where or when that end will be. The man will continue to play basketball. I believe he will be late. He will be Uncle Drew. From the Uncle Drew.
There you go. Kyrie.
We'll be watching him dress up in that number 21 with that gray jersey and a long gray beard going out there dunking on fools. That's what I see Tim Duncan out there doing. But, I mean, his game, he's refined it so much to where, he's able to play it at the level he has. And he's still, a major contributor on that roster as well. So you'll see guys like Tim Duncan, and you're right. A guy like that, with his consistency, should have more accolade, but you don't hear it as much maybe because he isn't so flashy and he isn't on the flashy team. But still, one of the more impactful. I mean, right up there with that top tier of top five, six.
Well, it looks like Haas has dropped it. We'll try and get him back on the line. Yeah, we'll see if we can get Haas back on the line. But yeah, I would, as far as the conversation about Kobe Bryant is concerned, I think the overall thing to draw away from Kobe Bryant's final year, but I think that the interesting thing about watching Kobe Bryant is that we're getting a chance to see him go out, and we're getting a chance to see him go out on his own, right? So like, rarely will we see a superstar kind of make the conscious decision. And I know a lot of people honestly thought Kobe should have called it quits a few years ago, but now that he's come out and made his own farewell, I think similar to Derek Jeter a few years back, similar to Mariano Rivera, when you have these guys publicly state that they will be done by the end of the year, I think that A, relieves some of the pressure, but also B, allows them to kind of go out on their own. And so now they won't have the responsibility, I guess, to kind of brace the viewers. They everybody is conscious already that Kobe Bryant's last year is here, and I think that can shape what he does this season. So when he did do that, record that dunk the other night, I think that was another signifying moment of how, on the way out, certain things pop out about Kobe Bryant's career or Kobe Bryant's performances that we wouldn't have noticed otherwise. Like, if Kobe Bryant had never told us he was going to retire at the end of the season, I'm sure that dunk would have made noise, but I don't know if it would have the same pop, the same reverberation as it did that specific one, because it's like, oh, here he is on his last season and he can still get up. So I think the fact that we know, the fact that we're all aware, adds on to the allure that is Kobe Bryant's retirement season for a lot of NBA fans.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean, I get it. I mean, it's like, is that Kobe's last facial? Probably will be. It'll probably be the last time anybody will get that close to the rim again. So I agree with you there. Let's go ahead. Let's give it another Ryan Fitzpatrick timeout. Let's see if I can get the gift of staying on the line for the next half an hour. We'll see if my technical difficulties finally end. Amiri, go.
Indeed, so listeners out there can go check me out throughout the week over at jgsportstalk.com, at jgsportstalk as well. You can also find me at jgsportstalk.com and at Amiritullo, AmiriTullocH.
Hey, everybody knows where to find me. I'm going to spend my last Ryan Fitzpatrick before the holiday season giving a happy birthday shout-out to Naomi Marquez and Kyrie Marquez, one yesterday, one tomorrow. Big shout-out to myself and my little nephew, Kofi. strong happy birthday to you yesterday as well. I can't believe how many birthdays there are during the season. I mean, what was everybody doing that month ago? Anyway, happy birthday to everybody. Enjoy the holiday season to everybody. Big shout out to everybody who's helped make this show possible as well. Yep. Of course, I can't go any further without saying a big, big, big thank you to my man across from me. Well, not literally across from me. He's like, you know, miles away. But my man, Amiri Tulloch, much appreciated. And let's not forget, you know, Reverend Ralph Mancini, who comes on every week. Let's not forget who's coming up next, Bigger, Better, Bedway. Big thanks to him. Thanks to everybody who's come on the show. Also, big shout out to people who represent and give props to the show. Chris Carino out there doing the play-by-play for Brooklyn Nets Radio. Right now, he's going to be doing Bills Redskins today. So big shout out to him. Friends of the show, Robin Lundberg, Don LaGreca. I can continue and I can continue, but I know Brian Benway sitting there. He's seizing. So let's get into the top of the next hour. Green and White Show, Mary Tulloch there, Joseph Haas here, and next on the line is Bigger, Badder, Benway. So you know it's 9 a.m. Eastern. Brian, what's up, buddy? Tell me you're up. Tell me you made it.
Guys, what's up? I'm actually leaving Dallas. I was in Dallas for the weekend, so I'm somewhere between Dallas and Waco, Texas, home of the Baylor Bears. So I have no clue what part I'm in, but I'm somewhere between Dallas and Waco.
Wow, that sounds like, you know what you could actually, that sounds like the beginning of a very, 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 I don't know, like a Western or something. Somewhere between Dallas and Waco. That sounds like that.
I'm literally a moving target today on the show.
Love it. Let's try to keep it stationary for a couple of minutes there. Remember the great Brian Benway. You can hear him. You can always hear him doing his play-by-play during the year as well. You can always catch him on the Green and White Show. You can find him on Twitter 24/7 with his opinions at Brian Benway. That's with a Y, not with an I. I'm going to get started with, yeah, Amiri, I know. I'm going to get started with MMA. Are you kidding me? Well, another great slate of fights. I mean, you got lightweight. You got heavyweight. You had a great mix. And guess what? It was a free show, people. They put it on Fox, so you can get a bite, so you can get a nibble, a small taste of what us MMA fans really enjoy on a week-to-week basis. If not on the cable networks, we get preview events every couple of months. There's going to be one in January as well. So let me get this stuff started. First, you got Michael Johnson talking a lot of lip. Nate Diaz, another guy, you know, former champion, talks a lot, but actually, you know, shows up in the ring, gets a three-round decision against Johnson. But really, look, he was pushing Johnson around, and there was some little cheap stuff later. So I want to get your opinion on Michael Johnson. Also, Junior DeSantos, okay, goes down to Overeem in what I thought was kind of a short stoppage there. Overeem was in control, but I thought DeSantos, as a former champion, you give him a little bit more. And then, of course, the great Rafael Dos Anjos, who just goes out there and turns Cerrone into a jabroni. Brian, your thoughts?
And actually, of all the guys that you mentioned, I interviewed all of those guys at one point in time, whether it was in Las Vegas when I used to work there covering MMA, or whether it was on Yahoo Sports from our home base in Houston. So I interviewed all those guys, and one of my favorite guys to interview was Cerrone the Jabroni, as you put it. And I like that nickname, by the way. The Iron Sheik and The Rock would be proud that you did Cerrone the Jabroni. So you have that going for you on a Sunday. And I want to get started with what the UFC is doing. They've had a heck of a month and a half, haven't they? They had Holly Holm beating Ronda Rousey. And then last week we had the great Conor McGregor, the 13-second knockout. And then last night. So what the UFC does very well is they come at you in spurts. And I love that they put it on free television on Fox. And it's kind of like what NBC is doing now, putting boxing on Saturdays on NBC. And we've talked about this before, how the exposure needs to continue and how you have to follow up on your really big events and get people to continue to be interested. And when you look at Nate Diaz, I'm a huge fan of what he does. And that match I was pretty excited about. I actually watched part of that when I was at the Dallas Stars Montreal Canadiens game last night. I had a lot of stuff on. I was in a suite last night with Fox Sports South. We, of course, had the hockey game on. And then on one TV, we had UFC on. And on the other TV, we had what you guys were watching, Cowboys and Jets, which was only 10 minutes from where I was at last night. So when you're looking at UFC, they followed up their success of their last couple of pay-per-views with a pretty entertaining card last night. And I love the guys, and you guys probably know this by now, I love the guys that love to talk. I love trash talkers. I love those two guys. So Johnson and Diaz, to me, it's, yeah, you can talk the talk, but can you walk the walk? And we saw Diaz do a great job of that. As far as Cerrone goes, he normally talks the talk and walks the walk, but he was a tad bit behind. He was a step slower, it seemed, last night. But all in all, UFC did a great job to follow up the last couple of pay-per-views with what they put out last night.
Yeah, I mean, talk about interesting, talk about entertaining, and I love the fact that they did get to be a showcase, you know, on regular TV so people can get to understand and embrace it, and you know, that even gets people who aren't traditional MMA fans, like my younger brother, who is a Jets fan, so, you know, he was interested in watching Jets Cowboys, and I had the whole dual screen going at my abode, so I had UFC here and football there, and it happened that that the Jabroni, those Anjos, and I went with the Jabroni with those Anjos as opposed to Dale. So I went, you know, went Jabroni there. So you go Jabroni versus those Anjos, and you get that. And guess what it was? It made the perfect halftime slot. It fit perfectly into the halftime of the football game to where my brother said, you know what, man, UFC and NFL should kind of hook up and throw one of these fights in for halftime. That was real good. They should really consider doing this on like a Sunday night or something like that. And you know, I can understand how that would be, you know, a great idea. But then again, it's kind of different strokes for different folks. You know, it gets a little messy sometimes in an MMA fight. My mom had watched MMA for the first time yesterday and was like, why are those two boxers hugging each other on the ground? And you know, it's explained that they stopped boxing about the minute they said go. So for you.
But
I wonder
how you like it, though.
Oh, she enjoyed it. My mom's one of the reasons why I loved sports to begin with as a kid. And one of the two things she always had on, if it wasn't for football, it was boxing.
And you know what, guys? This reminds me, Hosh, what you talked about with the UFC having kind of the perfect slot for halftime of the football game. I know last week we talked a little bit of WWE. And I know you guys did your homework, but I want to go back because what you mentioned actually brings up what the WWE did about mid to late 90s. I don't know if you remember this or not. I'm a little bit older than you guys. But what the WWE did is they actually had a championship match during halftime of the Super Bowl 2 years in a row. It was called Super Bowl Championship, and it was The Rock going against Mankind in an empty arena match. And it was a match that was, as soon as the Super Bowl halftime show started, the WWE put that match on free television on the USA Network. And the ratings that they got were spectacular. So that reminds me of what the WWE did. I think it was 98-99-ish when they did that. So what the UFC kind of did yesterday, placed it perfectly. I wouldn't be surprised if in the next year or two we maybe see that same thing happen with the UFC, if they can get a deal with the NFL and say, hey, listen, because you know how sometimes during the halftime of the Super Bowl they have like the Puppy Bowl or whatever they do.
Yeah, I remember back in the day they had the dueling beer bottles.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if UFC maybe tried to do something like that, like the WWE did back in the late 90s. But yeah, that reminds me of what they did. Back. By the way, 2 weeks in a row, I've dropped wrestling references on the program. I don't know if that's good or bad.
Yeah, I don't know. I think you're just aiming for me to come off the top ropes and drop an elbow on you. I mean, that's basically what it seems like.
It's
either that or
yeah,
without a doubt, because we definitely went there on Twitter as well, being joined on the Green and White Show by the great Brian Benway. Folks, remember, you can follow him on Twitter at Brian Benway. That's with a Y, not with an I. He's mobile right now, but he's on the Green and White Show. I'm Rachel Lefebvre, Joseph Haas here. We'll continue with a little bit of MMA talk. Let me tell a quick story, my man. Hey, Brian, I don't know if you know this, but, you know, I never even mentioned this on the show, and I realized that because I went back and listened. Did I tell you that I met Robbie Lawler? I mean, I'm going around doing my thing, okay, as a rep out there in Jackson Heights, Queens. And all of a sudden, they're starting to film, and I recognize the one guy. It's Harper Hill from CSI New York. I recognize him, and I'm like, who's this buff guy wearing a Brazil soccer jersey? Is that his bodyguard? He's a little too close for the action there. I mean, when they yell action, he's right next to him. He's got to get off camera a little bit. That's what I thought he was. You know, so I go up, I say hi to Harper Hill, and then the other guy obviously thinks I'm going to shake his hand too, so he extends his hand. And I shake his hand. I go, hey, how are you? Like, this guy's tough. He nearly broke my hand. He goes, you know, he's like, yeah, okay, hi. His name was Robbie. Okay, fine. And then I go and I show people the pictures, and they're like, hey, do you know who that is? I'm like, hey, his name's Robbie. That's Robbie Lawler, MMA Robbie Lawler. So I'll never forget that time where I accidentally almost got, you know, my hand crushed by Robbie Lawler. I just wanted to try to compete with your Ronda Rousey story.
That's a cool story. And I've got several athletes that I've met over the years in person when I've interviewed, and they've almost broken my hand with their handshake. I mean, isn't it because you see them on TV, mm-hmm. and you know they're powerful, and you know they're mm-hmm. strong, but until you actually physically meet them and shake their hand, mm-hmm. it's crazy. I almost got the wind knocked out of me by Evander Holyfield one time. Evander shook my hand. I was interviewing him in Las Vegas. And then you know how sometimes you, like, shake a guy's hand and then you pat him on the back at the same time?
Yeah.
Evander Holyfield did that to me. Shook my hand and then whacked me on the back. I was like, hey, good to meet you, my buddy. And he almost snapped the wind out of me. And I was like, wow, am I that big of a wuss that Evander Holyfield is going to knock the wind out of me by shaking my hand and patting me on the back? I was almost embarrassed.
Yeah, no. I don't know, but it's something. I mean, all I know is I'm glad we got you around, because it looks like if we could have left you in the fight game a little bit more, we wouldn't have you around there, Brian. I mean, every time I turn around,
I know. I would have gotten knocked out eventually.
Yeah, I mean, you don't hear Brian Gumbel or Bob Costas having this problem with their interviewees, you know, getting ready to straight up. You know, I mean, I don't know, but I mean, I think that's hilarious. The more trouble he gets into. Hey, look, let's get into real quickly some college football before we because I love talking the fight game as well. MMA, definitely love the MMA conversation with our man Brian Benway. Utah ends up beating BYU. That was a game where BYU ends up just trying to storm back. It's the bowl season in college football. Okay, Oklahoma is going to face off against number one Clemson. Michigan State's going to face off against Alabama. That's your college playoff, okay? That's your top four. I see how they set it up. They wanted to try to get, you know, a number. You know, they did get a good matchup in the 2-3. I love Michigan State-Alabama matchup. Okay, I think that's going to be a great game. I actually think that's going to be the winner of that game is probably going to end up winning the championship. That's my opinion. What's yours, Brian?
When I look at the brackets, and I think we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, Michigan State is the team that I'm going to watch out for. They are mm-hmm. under the radar out of these four teams. And you look at what conference they're in, Ohio State's conference. They won the national championship very recently, as we all know. So I'm looking at Michigan State. They have two big things that championship teams have. Number one, it's solid defense. They hit
mm-hmm.
hard
yes.
on that Michigan State defense. So that's the first thing I'm looking at. And the second thing is they control the clock and they keep the score low and they have quarterbacks that don't make turnovers. So I think that's what I'm looking for. Now, you're going to say, well, obviously Alabama has a great defense. Yeah, that is true. But I like the Michigan State defense a little bit better. So I'm looking, and I know I mentioned this before, probably about a month or so ago when we first started to talk about the college football playoff, I'm looking at Michigan State as my dark horse in this
college football playoff.
I am going to pick them to beat Alabama. I haven't decided on the other game yet. I'm probably leaning more towards Clemson, but I'm telling you, I'm looking out for Michigan State against Alabama.
Yeah, that That is the one tough game. I kind of felt if Alabama was going to face either Clemson or Oklahoma, I would have Alabama in that game. This makes it a tougher matchup, Michigan State versus Alabama. I really can see Michigan State coming. I mean, they've got a tough – they came out of a real tough Big Ten, Alabama. I think, you know, has taken, of course, a step, you know, step back a little bit. But that's going to be – I mean, I just love the fact that this is a matchup. I'm going to look at that 2-3 matchup, and that's going to be my, you know, de facto national championship game. Of course, I'll watch the next game, and I'll be just as interested as any fan. But seeing Michigan State and Alabama go at it, I'm going to love that game. More notable games to be played, more notable bowl games. Michigan is going to play Florida, and let's not forget Notre Dame is going up against the aforementioned and prior national champions, Ohio State. That's going to be a game. You know, I've heard a lot of talk about this game, and I want to get your opinion on this because you're around athletes a whole lot. You get to see, you know, games kind of like this. Is it going to be a game where Notre Dame, who really wants to be in that bowl game, is just going to show up, where an Ohio State team with a lot of guys who are going to be going to the NFL, they're not going to show up so much? Is it going to be something where Urban Meyer is really going to have to work hard to get that Ohio State team to show up against Notre Dame? Do you believe that? I mean, I really don't, but you might have a point. I mean, people might have a point there.
No, that's a bunch of hogwash. Here's why. Notre Dame and Ohio State are two premier college football programs. Notre Dame, if you have Notre Dame on your schedule, they have a bullseye on their back because they are Notre Dame. This is going to be a game where Ohio State is going to want to beat the Golden Domers, and Notre Dame is going to have a chip on their shoulder. Brian Kelly is not going to let his Notre Dame team not be prepared. And by the way, that Showtime series this year where they followed the Notre Dame football team around, did you guys get to check that out? That was awesome. The Notre Dame coaches do a fantastic job of motivating. And you don't go play at Notre Dame if you're going to take a bowl game off. This is a great matchup. Those two teams travel well. Their fan bases are everywhere. Everywhere. Those two teams probably have fan bases in Alaska, I would imagine. So that's going to be a great game to watch. And I'm telling you, Notre Dame has a target on their backs, as always. And Ohio State, they're no slouch. They're the defending national champions. So I think it's going to be a game where both teams are not going to want to lose because the other team is so highly regarded.
I'm listening to you, and the first thing I'm thinking is, I wonder how hard and how long and how far you've got to go in Alaska. That's going to be one. I wonder if they have those up there. Hey, one last notable game in the college football slate that, well, notable for me anyway, Stanford and Iowa. I can't wait to see that matchup as well. Two tough, gritty teams, two teams who can definitely do, you know, play on the ground. Iowa, a little explosive in the air, but not really. I love how Stanford plays. Lateef McCaffrey gets a little payback for not getting the highest in there in that matchup. So I like that matchup as well, a little classic War of the Roses there. So a lot of good matchups for the bowl. Is there one, you know, kind of not so high-profile bowl that you're into, maybe a couple in the region that they play, because they play a lot of bowl games in Texas, my man?
You know what? I actually have a bowl game for you, and I have a funny story. Well, you might not think it's funny, but so the Alamo Bowl in San Antonio, you know, that's where I live, that's going to be TCU in Oregon, okay? Now, that's going to be a good game no matter what. But the interesting story is I have a friend, I actually have one friend, and he owns a margarita stand in the Alamo Dome where that game's going to be played. And I was at a hockey game last week in San Antonio at the AT&T Center where the Spurs played, and my buddy came up to me and he said, "Hey, what are you doing January 2nd? And I said, "Well, I'm flying back here from New York. I'll be home for Christmas. Actually, I'll leave on Wednesday to go home." I said, "I'm back in San Antonio January 2nd. Why?" And he said, "Do you want to work the margarita stand at the Alamo Bowl?" And I said, "Well, I don't know. How much money can I make?" And he's like, "Actually, you can make like a couple $100 just serving margaritas." And so I said, "Well, what do I have to do?" He said, "Well, if you can work a blender and you can pour margaritas, that's pretty much all you have to do." So I was like, I'm in. sign me up. And the best part is that his margarita stand actually is in the concourse, so you can actually watch the game and serve margaritas. So, gentlemen, on January the 2nd, when you're watching the Alamo Bowl, TCU taking on Oregon, I'm actually, this is a true story, I swear to God, I'm going to be serving margaritas in the Alamo Dome at the Alamo Bowl.
I love it. You're going to be our true insider on that game. I love it completely. Hopefully
isn't this ridiculous? I don't know. I always have ridiculous things happen to me like this. So
that
was the truth story. I'm going to be slinging margaritas. Now, if I can just, drink less than I give away, then we'll be all set.
That's what I'm saying. I was just thinking the very same thing. And I also thought, your friend just made another friend here on the Green and White Show.
Yeah. Hey, January 2nd, I think, is on a Saturday. So I'll be the January 3rd to Sunday. So if you guys are having the show on January the 3rd, I could probably tell you some fantastic stories from slinging margaritas at the Alamo Bowl the next day.
And that's going to be outstanding. I can't wait for that report. That's probably going to be the most fun report. That's going to be a way to kick off 2016. We'll call it Margaritaville. That's unbelievable. So we got some MMA in here. Always love when we get a chance to do that. Got a little NCAA football as well. Okay, one last thing I want, because I know you saw it because it went viral. Okay, you got two. I got two, and I love when I give you the choices. Okay, I love when I throw them out there, and I go, Benway, you go at it. This is why you're bigger, badder, Benway. I'm giving you two choices, okay? Both of them went a little sensational on the internet. You get to comment on either Kobe Bryant's last facial as he gets some bunnies and dunks, or you get to comment on LeBron James going right into the crowd and taking out Jason Day's wife and the reaction. Which one do you want?
I've got to go LeBron James just lambasting Jason Day's wife. I don't know how she got up from that, but LeBron James looked like he was a middle linebacker playing for the Cleveland Browns. And LeBron James, he's a big boy. He's 6'8", 275, something like that.
Yeah,
so he's a big dude. And I'll tell you what, she got her money's worth, though, didn't she? She got her money's worth in the front row at an NBA game. I'll tell you what, when I'm looking at that, I have not been in that situation before. I've been courtside at games before, but I've never had anybody run me over like a freight train. And the reaction to me is hilarious because, as you guys know, in this day and age, anything and everything people are going to overreact to, one side or the other. To me, it's just the entertainment factor of, holy cow, there's this guy, LeBron James, who is, what would you say, probably three times the size of Jason. And by the way, she's a cutie. Jason Day did all right for himself. And my next
life,
I'm going to be a professional golfer.
Yeah, that's
so I can get some hot tail like Jason Day did. And I think, and by the way, I don't know if this is still true, but I remember watching some golf before, and they were saying that Jason Day and his family, they actually don't have a house. They live in a camper that they drive around the country. And this was this was like 6 months ago. So I don't know if that's changed since then, but I forgot what tournament it was. It was probably the Masters. Mm-hmm. And the commentators were saying, Jim Nantz, they were saying that Jason Day and his wife, they don't actually have a house. They live in a camper, and they drive around Texas or around the tour in their house, which is their camper.
That's awesome. That's actually one of the things I'd love to be. I'd love to be able to get a camper the size of an 18-wheeler.
Because he's made a lot of money recently, but that actually did happen. By the way, I want to throw this in there. I don't know how much time we have left, but I am driving through the hometown right now of a celebrity. I'm going to tell you the hometown, and I'm going to see if you can guess who it is. It's pretty random. Mejia, Texas, spelled M-E-X-I-A. Mejia, Texas. Any idea whose celebrity is their hometown?
I couldn't come Okay, you said someone. It could be somebody on TV. It could be an actor. It could be
a former Playboy playmate who has since passed away.
Oh, Brian.
Really
famous. Anna Nicole Smith.
Yes, bingo.
Yeah, I get the prize.
Anna Nicole Smith's hometown is La Jolla, Texas. And I am driving through her hometown right now.
Amen, amen. Anna Nicole Smith getting a Anna Nicole Smith. Is that how you're going out? Is that how you're going to close out 2015? No, not really. We're going to have you come back on next week. Unbelievable. Look, we always have fun. Hopefully this entire conversation will end free as you're rolling through Texas, okay? I don't want to get tired.
I'm always hands-free. I'm not a lawbreaker.
Love it. Brian Benway, always, always love him and thankful for him joining us on the program each and every week. That's at Brian Benway on Twitter. That's with a Y, not with an I, folks. Always a pleasure, pleasant conversation. Love having you on, my man. Hey, can't wait to have you on again next week and all of 2016, homie. Get in safe, enjoy, and if I don't talk to you, you have a merry, merry, merry Christmas, and I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Both of you guys have a very merry Christmas. I'll actually be in the great state of New York next Sunday.
Yes, you will be.
Near Lake Placid, New York, at my parents' house. So I'll only be 4 hours from you guys next week. So have a merry Christmas, and I look forward to talking to you guys.
You got it. And the same, my man, Brian. Take care. Drive safe, buddy. All right. Always love having my man on the program. Some of the great stories. I can't believe it. Man, hey, I just pulled that one, and I did not Google that, folks. Green and White Show here. Joseph Foss. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at Jersey House. Don't forget my man at Amiri Tulloch as well. Follow him on Twitter at Amiri Tulloch. Now, just to get ready to close out the show, I mean, it's been another great show. Like I said, I want to give a special thanks to each and every person who's always helped make the show what it is, especially all through 2015. That's what the season's about. Let's all go out there and really power hard, enjoy the holidays, and then get ready for a big 2016. Like, I can just see it right now. You're going to enjoy some NFL playoffs. You're going to enjoy the college postseason as well. You're going to get new baseball players on new teams. Basketball, how's that going to end? How's the end of the Kobe tour going to end? Amiri, how's the end of the Kobe tour? You know, how's it going to end? That's what I'm looking forward to. So we're closing out 2015 next week, getting ready to get into 2016. I'm excited. We've got great games. Man, I can't even contain myself.
Should be a fun one.
Great conversation. Great conversation with our man Brian Benway as well, as he was able to. We talked a little MMA and a whole lot of that good stuff. We're gonna get ready to call it a day, man. I mean, is it already that time? Was that much closer to that battle in MetLife? I can't wait. I know you can't too. I hope you enjoy the game. Remember, happy holidays, my man, to you and yours, Amiri. Definitely make sure you send a shout out to the family and friends. And to all of you out there, I guess I just got this before we head out, Amiri. God bless. Go Jets. I guess it's time to turn this up. Oh, wait. Before I say that, maybe I should give Alex Hurst another shout-out, right? Make sure everybody goes out and checks out Alex Hurst. Search Alex H. on Amazon. Go out there. Support the album Better Late Than Never. Make sure you go out and do that. And, you know, as a little shout out, God bless, go Jets, turn us up. How about Alex Hurst takes us home?
Yes, sir.
Music group. Alex H. Alex H. The Bomb Factory. Success.
Ladies and gentlemen, allow me to properly introduce the most incredible beast from the East, live and live in color, in shape, fitted to leather, it's soft butter. Color up, my dollars up, I'm winning exotic cars to women and more women. More sinning, I'm addicted to success. Blessed, young and gifted, the bar's been lifting. Started from the bottom, I'm now on top of the world. Look, my, I made it, the new most hated. Underestimated since I haven't been painted. Our stories aren't related, so they don't believe. But who cares, I'ma run a few years before I fade to black. My impact, shift back to order to lyrical manslaughter in the first degree. Success, young, fresh. so hopefully they forgive me for enjoying the hate. And since I'm caught in the moment, let me catch the feeling. Sky's the limit, so what the f*** is the ceiling? After my first million, I'm gunning 100 plus.